This is Brian Nickel, Chief Strategy Officer for RSNH, and I want to welcome you to this new episode of AEC Perspectives. I am proud to have a colleague, Jim Hullett, join me for this exciting episode around the state of transportation. Jim has 34 years of transportation engineering experience in both the public and the private sectors. Jim joined RSNH in April of 2004 as the Transportation Infrastructure Practice Director of Operations. Additionally, Jim opened RSNH's Atlanta and Savannah offices and led the firm's transportation initiatives in the Georgia market. In 2009, Jim moved into the role of Mid-Atlantic Region Director, leading sales, operations, strategic growth, and expansion in the states of Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. In 2015, Jim was promoted to Senior Vice President and to serve as RSNH's National Transportation Infrastructure Practice Director. Jim currently serves as the Executive Vice President of Business Growth Strategy, where he leads the firm's business growth strategy efforts. Prior to joining RSNH, Jim was employed with Georgia DOT for 15 years, where he held key leadership positions in the Division of Pre-Construction, Division of Field Districts, Division of Operations, and Planning, Data, and Intermodal Development. Additionally, Jim served as the Executive Assistant to the Commissioner, where he gained valuable insight of the overall operations of the Georgia Department of Transportation. Jim, I'm so excited to have you on AEC Perspectives. Welcome.
Thanks, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here. I look forward to our time together today.
So I want to jump right in and talk about the state of transportation. You have an incredible career in both the public and private sectors, and I'd like to talk to you about some of your thoughts around what's happening in transportation across our country and some of your viewpoints on various issues. My first question is, what are your thoughts on sustainable funding for transportation in the future?
Well, Brian, first of all, we all know that back in November 2021, the IIJA bill was passed, and $1.2 trillion bill and $550 billion in new money. Although that sounds great, and it is great, it's providing support for categories like roads and bridges and broadband and water and other things as well. It doesn't hit all the needs that we have from a financial standpoint. We're all familiar with the challenges that we've got in front of us with inflation and challenges with increased construction cost and supply chain issues and a lot of the things that the state DOTs are facing across the country. And, thank goodness for the IIJA bill, because, had it not been there, we could really be in trouble. And I've heard at AASHTO meetings and local agency meetings that I've been in across the country, where a lot of the DOT leadership certainly appreciates the IIJA, but then they say, it really has only gotten us basically zero balance, if you will, because if you take the inflation and the cost of doing business, it kind of evens itself out. But again, good to have that federal funding. But, the states don't just depend on the federal funding. A lot of states across the country have their own funding, whether it be, state and local tax incentives, user fees, things like tolls, and sale of public assets is some ways in which they generate funding. But even though they have that funding that goes, with the federal funding, where they can leverage their local funds to do more, if you look out long term, we still have a funding gap and a funding need that's being unmet.
Yeah, and I think that's as we look at the vast amount of infrastructure that exists, and the transportation infrastructure in particular, it's aging. It's aged. It's falling apart in some places. We've band-aided it. We put the silly putty and the super glue on it. And so when you get an influx of funding, Notwithstanding the inflation and some of the supply chain issues, it's a boost for us to help start that process to repair, rehabilitate the critical infrastructure that we have across our country. But it just doesn't seem like it's enough. What's your thought? What do we need to do to keep that on the forefront of our country in terms of the investments that we're going to make?
Well, I mean, to further expand on the funding, Brian, as we know, with electrification and the rising surge of electric vehicles, as well as coming out of COVID, there's a lot of work from home and change in terms of the way people are doing business and not traveling as much as maybe they did once before, and that impacts funding because traditionally across the country, states rely on the Highway Trust Fund, which is funded through the gas tax. And so what we're having to do across the country today, and the U.S. DOT and state DOTs at AASHTO and other agencies and other venues, they're debating and talking about this issue across the country. What's the right answer? Is it a some type or some form of a user fee, whether that be a vehicle mile traveled or some other mechanism? Certainly recognize that there's got to be a way to be able to capture the funding needed for the, as you talked earlier, aging infrastructure, capacity needs. I mean, we're seeing, in the latest economic information that's out there and looking at GDP and so forth and things like that, we're looking at where is the concentration of where people are living, where business is happening, where economic development's occurring. And it's dynamic. It's moving around in different parts of the country, not historically maybe where it's been, and we're seeing migration and things like that. So, there's just a lot of various factors that are playing in right now into infrastructure, and that only complicates how do we pay for it. I kind of look at what the states are facing with. I'm not the expert here, but as I look at it, just from my viewpoint, I kind of see it broken down in a few ways. One I see is a what they're looking at, what are the high priority or what I'd call the must-do type projects, and that's projects like deficient bridges that's in very poor condition, safety issues to reduce fatalities and major incidents, deteriorating roadways, things of that nature. Those are the things they just have to do. And then there's projects, as I mentioned a minute ago, projects to support demographic and economic growth initiatives, where we're seeing the movement there. Then asset management tools and techniques to better assess current conditions and processes to prioritize the needs and implement measures to extend the life cycle of the infrastructure investments. And then under the IIJA, with the emphasis on climate, how do we approach resiliency and harden the assets against extreme weather conditions and other climate-related issues? It just kind of collides together, I think, on a daily basis, as you well know, as having formerly served a DOT as a leader.
Yeah, we have such a similar pathway in our careers. And I think we're seeing very similar things. So we've got this massive amount of need. We've got high priorities, demographic changes, as you note, asset management requirements to extend the life cycle of those assets and do it in a way that is resilient. And so that the actual infrastructure lasts and the next storm doesn't take it out. Can you talk a little bit about what is being done to make our transportation network more sustainable and resilient for the customers that use it?
Yeah. Well, Brian, I'm going to talk about what's in the IIJA and where the focus seems to be. And I'm just going to kind of run through, this information is public information. Anybody can get out and research through the U.S. DOT on this. But I just want to touch on what I see as some of the key areas for sustainability and resiliency. And the first area comes in congestion and air quality. And, looking at, there's a carbon reduction program that's going to reduce transportation-related emissions. And there's grants for projects in major urban areas to advance innovative and multimodal solutions to relieve congestion, like transit, biking, like bike share, scooter share, and walking, sidewalks, trails, things of that nature. There's also support for pedestrian and bike infrastructure, recreational trails, safe routes to schools, things like that. On the electric vehicle side, there's EV charging infrastructure along highways and community charging grants to provide local charging where, you know, the people are living, working, and shopping. On the transit and rail side, it's the largest investment in transit in American history under the IIJA. You know, things like low or no emission vehicle programs and electric or low emitting ferry programs are there to, you know, provide more energy efficient modes of transportation. On the ports and airports side, for ports, there's a new program for reducing emissions from idling trucks at the port facilities. Grants to improve port facilities by reducing or eliminating toxic air pollutants and greenhouse gas emissions. And at the airports, there's support for client-friendly terminal and landside projects through discretionary grants that increase the energy and efficiency through upgrading environmental systems, upgrading plant facilities, and achieving LEED standards. That's just a few things that I pulled out of the IIJA funding. But what I wanted to talk about real quickly was the PROJECT program. PROJECT stands for Promoting Resilient Operations for Transformative, Efficient, and Cost Savings Transportation. And the purpose of this plan, Brian, is for strengthening the surface transportation to be more resilient to hazards, natural hazards, including climate change, sea level rise, flooding, extreme weather events, and other national disasters. And the types of funds that are under the PROJECT program are in six different areas. There's resiliency planning. This is things like capacity building and evacuation planning and preparation. There's resilience improvements, focus on surface transportation assets, such as improving drainage, upgrades to meet and exceed design standards, and relocating highways or elevating bridges, things like that. And then on the community side, there's a community resilience and evacuation routes. This measures that are in place here are to make evacuation routes more resilient or add capacity and even redundant evacuation routes. And I think that really hits to safety too. And then lastly, adding at-risk coastal infrastructure. And these are projects to protect and strengthen and relocate coastal highways and non-rail infrastructure. So, you know, a lot there. I know I said a lot, but a lot going on. But all that's under the guise of sustainable and resilient transportation system. So,
and I think what that speaks to, Jim, is the IIJA, as we look at that and the scope of it, it's comprehensive. It's addressing the core, you know, the rehabilitation, protecting assets at the same time as making sure the assets are hardened so that these climate issues, the kind of weather impacts that we see, natural disasters, that infrastructure is far more resilient once those projects are completed. And that's a priority because when you build a new project, you don't want to come back and rebuild it the next year because a hurricane wiped it out. You want that resiliency that lasts like our interstate system did for more than 50 years. And you approach it in a way that's comprehensive, as you said, that's planned, and with a focus on safety. And that's where I want to go to next. I love how you set the stage for us to talk about safety because, as you and I both know, not only at RSNH, but back to our DOT days, safety is always one of our top priorities, and it's a priority for every transportation project and investment. Have you noticed, in particular, any changes to the way that safety is addressed?
Absolutely, Brian. But before I address that, you know, as you said, you and I haven't worked for the DOTs, the public sector, and you know, when you ask it, has anything changed? One thing hasn't changed, and certainly one thing will never change, and that's the concern of fatalities on the roadway system. And under President Biden's administration, I mean, that is a major focus. Is no fatalities actually would be what the focus is, what the goal is. And so, continuing to keep that at the forefront of the mind is what the federal and the state DOTs, are doing. And, right now, according to US DOT, the US has one of the highest traffic fatality rates in the world. That kind of hit me a little bit when I read that, because we're, we always doubt ourselves. The US has always been a leader in everything. Well, that's certainly not an area you want to be a leader in. And, we're double the rate of Canada and quadruple that in Europe. So, that kind of sets the stage of there's a lot of work left to be done, and a lot of emphasis put on safety. But you asked the question, have I noticed any changes? And, I'll just point out a few things. And some of this is changes, some of it's maybe just more of an emphasis. But I'll start by saying that, the state DOTs are certainly emphasizing distracted driving. You're seeing this in educational ways at which they're doing education on this. There's warning signs and communication, things like that. You see out on the message boards across the interstates, there'll be warnings, there's signs, there's commercials, there's all kinds of things, that promotional things going on in that regard. And of course, as you know, that's very important. Safety is to RSNH as our company. And certainly we have a policy around distracted driving that's very important to our CEO and our board and our leadership. I'd also say there's expanded attention to pedestrian and bike safety, like dedicated bike lanes and pedestrian crossing islands, as well as ADA accessibility. There's traffic calming measures. You see those a lot of times in your local areas and your more your municipality areas. But I look at things like roundabouts and see that those seem to be becoming more prevalent. They seem to be very bringing a more safe traffic measure. And then I'd say also too, I know in Atlanta on 285 we have what we call the dynamic speed limit signs, where they can change based off demand, time of day, things like that. And and then the last thing I just wanted to say is that I believe with the focus on resiliency, there's a broadened approach to safety as it relates to climate and national disaster events, evacuation routes, aging and poor conditioned infrastructure. All of that, may restrict emergency responders having access to a critical situation, as an example, and that would be of concern and to the local municipalities or as well as the citizenry. So, there's a lot of things that go into safety today that goes beyond just the traditional traffic signals that we've thought in the past, stop signs, things like that, which are all still important.
Well, you talked about education, the importance of getting that word out to our citizens. You've talked about the engineering aspect, whether it be a roundabout type intersection that's a lot safer, lower speed. If there is an accident, it's a different kind of accident than, say, a high speed T-bone type of accident. And then you talked about enforcement, having, understanding that there are traffic rules and laws that need to be enforced, and it takes all of those coming together to bring forward a safe transportation system. Yet we've seen this marked increase in fatalities over the last several years, and we're doubling down on the kind of countermeasures to counteract those fatalities, because no one wants anybody to go home other than safe. And we want everybody to be on our system, driving, walking, biking in a safe way. You mentioned some really neat safety measures, dedicated bike lanes that back in the day when you and I were first starting out, we didn't have those. The bike shared the road in many cases. We've separated that. Can you talk about some of the things that you're seeing in some of those projects that are making a difference? Are you seeing that in our everyday actions working with our client DOTs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's, safety just can't be, overemphasized. Brian, and you're really seeing it in a lot of the major urban areas through the MPO planning process. And as we're working with a lot of our MPO clients, really looking at things like the sharing the roadway. I mean, how do we along the roadway create bike only portion of the lane where we're separating it out. We're striping it as a bike lane. We're putting impact attenuators at locations to where there might be ingress and egress to protect the bike, you know, bike users. And, you know, there's walkable pathways that intersect with our roadways today. And we're trying to make those, crossings where those intersect safer with new technologies and, you know, crossing type devices and things of that nature, warning signs. Also on traffic signals, I mean, there's things that are happening like, where there's the ability for an emergency vehicle to come to an intersection and get progression through a coordinated system because of the technology that's in place that gives them priority to the roadway. So that provides emergency service access, which is key, because any second could make a difference in a life, So just a lot. There's different looks always at different treatments for things like, you know, impact attenuators and new technologies and new ways there, things that we're doing in construction zones to provide a safer environment for the workers that are in the construction zones, because fatalities in construction zones is always an issue and it's always a concern. Just a lot of opportunity in the safety arena to continue to expand. I don't think that's ever, I think that's always at the forefront, because a big part of what the DOTs and what we as consultants working with our DOT partners are responsible for, and that's providing a safe, safe environment for people to commute and get on the roadway system.
Well, it's clearly a top priority. It weaves itself into all kinds of projects. It weaves itself into all kinds of technology in funding scenarios. So there are special funds for safety projects, and it ties in with the resiliency aspect as well. So you've kind of wrapped that all into one, where safety's priority number one for the DOTs, both at the federal and the state level, but also as we serve those clients, it's priority one for us. And I really appreciate you mentioning, you know, even the RSNH approach to distracted driving, you know, keeping your phone away, keeping your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road in a way that so we can make sure that not only we get to our destination safely, but all of our associates and colleagues do the same. Let's move, if we can, to this notion of equity. And I want to talk about equity in terms of the projects and priorities and needs of communities where transportation flows through. Equity is a factor as we look at our transportation systems. And can you talk a little bit about how equity is being considered in those project phases to make sure that we're addressing the needs of local communities?
Absolutely. Brian, I mean, one of the things that's going on and that we need to continue to improve on is, you know, early engagement with stakeholders in disadvantaged and low-income communities at the, you know, I would say at the as early as the planning stage. I know that as part of our NEPA process, there's always having to look at all various aspects of equity and environmental justice, but it needs to be at the forefront of what we're thinking, not just part of a process, it's important. There are some ongoing initiatives, and I just wanted to point to a couple of those that that are under the federal bill and that are really a focus at the federal level. And the first one is called Justice 40 Initiative. And the goal of this federal initiative is that 40% of the overall benefits of certain federal investments are going to flow to disadvantaged communities that are marginalized, underserved, overburdened by pollution. And there's different categories to where this funding will work towards improvements in these areas. The first one is climate change. Another one is clean energy and energy efficiency. Clean transit, affordable and sustainable housing, training and workforce development, remediation and reduction of legacy pollution. And then the last category is development of clean, critical clean water and wastewater infrastructure. So definitely there's a lot of attention being given to these areas that have been underserved and in major demand. Another initiative is called Reconnecting Communities Pilot Program Grants. And this funding supports planning and capital construction grants and technical assistance to reconnect communities that have been divided by transportation infrastructure. Eligible facilities are highways or other facilities that create a barrier to community connectivity. And this includes barriers to mobility, access, or economic development due to high speeds, grade separations, or other design factors. So there is a lot of attention being given to equity, as it should be. And you know, what you know we'll be looking to do is working with our partners, both at the state level as well as the local level, and through our MPO partners as well, to make sure that we're doing our part as we're working with our clients to make sure that we're keeping this at the forefront.
And I think the important part of this is it touches all phases of the project, as you note. It's early in that planning phase. And then when you get to the construction side, it's ensuring that those plans are built properly, they're enhancing our communities, and we're actually lifting up the communities that have been either divided or split or disadvantaged in prior projects. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of the federal bill, was this look back to say, how can we look forward in a way that builds up our communities all across, both urban and rural? And it's happened in both places. And in fact, some of the smaller towns have some of the biggest impacts. And so I think that's another aspect that, as you outline those project phases, it's everywhere in this process. Let's switch to talk about some of the tools, the systems, and resources that'll be beneficial to our clients to address the challenges we're facing and to stay ahead of the trends that we're seeing, like an increase in fatalities, looking at resiliency, looking at the kinds of things you talked about with sustainability and equity. Talk, if you would, about some of those tools and systems that you're seeing, or some of the resources out there that are currently driving through this transportation industry to advance us to the next level.
Well, first of all, Brian, I just want to say that, you know, I think it's vitally important for us as consultants to be engaged and to actively be involved in the industry to help shape the future of transportation. You know, as engineers and planners and consultants, you know, we're the innovators, and I believe our clients are looking for us to help them, you know, shape their future trends, and also provide innovative solutions to provide safe, sustainable, and a resilient infrastructure. Of course, having said that, you know, I feel one area our clients are highly focused on right now is asset management. Under the IIJA, the state DOTs are now required to consider extreme weather and resilience when developing their transportation asset management plans. You know, and this is going to entail evaluating the risk and the measures to ensure resiliency of assets during extreme weather and climate-related impacts. Additionally, you know, having tools and systems in place to collect, evaluate, inspect, and prioritize assets is going to be really key. Other trends, and perhaps as I'd classify them as potential disruptors, are topics like artificial intelligence, AI, and how that's going to impact how we do our business in the future. Electronic vehicles, we mentioned earlier, you know, having EV infrastructure in place, it's top of mind right now in the industry. And then, you know, another major challenge is available resources. And, you know, that's important for us and for our clients to deliver the programs and the projects that are out there. I classify, you know, Brian, as what I call a resource war. And I feel like the first to figure this out is going to be golden, because we being the clients and us are all battling for the same resources. So that's going to be a major challenge. And then, on the design side, we are, things are advancing in how we prepare a set of plans, or how clients are now expecting us to, submit our deliverables. And, we have 3D technology and things of that nature that, we're all getting up to speed on, using it, changing, new tools and techniques. And so that'll always be there for us. But, it's important for us to always stay up to speed on what's current and what's working best for us and our clients as we're trying to deliver our projects. So that's just a few things to touch on there that I see.
Well, there's incredible change that's happening, change that's been brought about by conditions, change that's been brought about by new leadership or new funding scenarios, or looking at the same problem in a different way. You've really set the stage for understanding what the state of transportation is for our country. I want to ask you a little unplanned question here, and there's no right answer, but what is your view in terms of the state of transportation? How, when we talk about the president goes on and talks about the state of the union, what would you say about the state of transportation if you were asked?
It's interesting, Brian. I was at a conference last year, and the guest speaker for that conference was, was talking about us being at a transformational time. Talked about the time at which the combustion engine was introduced. Talked about when the interstate highway system began construction and what that meant for connectivity across the interstate system. And I think we're in that time now, or not that I think. I think we all know that we're in that time. It's very transformational. So I think with that, more so than ever, it's important that we accept change. There's different dynamics. There's different challenges that we're faced with today, and I think it's incumbent upon us as consultants, as engineers, as planners, environmentalists, all that's in our industry and transportation, for us to be innovators and for us to work together and partner together more than we ever have to come up with ways at which we can, build a network that's safer, sustainable, resilient. But the biggest challenge I think we have in doing that is the funding. It's kind of being in somewhat asked to do, to do more with less. And so to me, the more is the innovation. And it's the ingenuity. It's how can we get more life cycle out of the system? I read an article here recently that talked on asset management, but the interesting part of the research was that what they were saying is that typically in an asset management, you've got good condition, you've got fair condition, you've got poor condition. And what typically happens is you tend to acknowledge and tout the good. You tend to then program the poor because it's either got to be rehabilitated or it's got to be replaced. But what this study said, and what seems to be, it really resonated with me, was it said that, what's important is to concentrate on the fair, because those infrastructure assets that are in the fair condition means that it's not poor, it's not good. But if we took the opportunity to go in modify the system, rehabilitate the system at the fair condition, and get more life cycle out of it, then it's longer before it gets to the poor condition. And when it gets to the poor condition, it costs more. So is that one mechanism at which to look at maintaining longer life cycle on our assets? So I think that's key. So it's things like that, Brian, I think we've got to look at. And just as far as the new money, new capacity, that's always going to be a challenge, and balance and economic development and how a state wants to grow, and be competitive in the market. But there's a challenge to delivering on that on a lot of fronts that we've talked about today.
So we're going to switch from that strong state of transportation over into some what I call rapid fire questions. And these are kind of questions we ask all of our guests to bring a little bit of their person and personal aspect to this. And so at RSNH, as you well know, having been here for almost 20 years now, we have an essence called Driven to Care. Can you tell our audience what Driven to Care means to you?
You know, me, Brian, it's to me, it's the essence of who you are. You know, it's at the core that, you know, caring matters deeply to you, both professionally and personally. You know, at work, you know, you care about your coworkers. You know, you want to make sure you're pulling your weight and ensuring the excellence, you know, in all that you do. And with our clients, we're looking to strive to develop trusting and longstanding relationships and focus on providing the highest quality service that we can provide. And then outside of work, you care about your family, your friends, and the community that you live in. So I guess I'd just kind of wrap that up and saying overall, caring is what motivates you, is how I'd respond to that.
That's a wonderful answer. And one of the neat things about that essence for RSNH is everybody brings a unique perspective. I really appreciate you sharing yours. Another thing we talk about on a regular basis on this podcast is mental health and wellness. And I ask our guests, what habits do you have to take care of your own mental health? And what can you share with our listeners?
Sure, Brian. And, you know, mental health is definitely something we definitely need to, you know, keep at the forefront. And, you know, for me, it's, I'll personally, I enjoy working out. That's a, you know, an area for me. I love to run and also do CrossFit. So those are things that I do, as consistently as I can to try to stay in shape and stay fit. You know, also enjoy golfing and outdoor activities like hiking and hunting and fishing and things like that. That's important to me. I really, really find a lot of solitude and leave a lot of worries and anxieties when I'm outdoors and spending time there. And then the last area I would say, which is extremely important, is work-life balance. And, you know, Kim and I, my wife, we're new empty nesters, and we're certainly enjoying what comes with that. We miss having our children around, but we also are enjoying the time to spend together and so forth. And, we're also new grandparents, so we're enjoying our time with our grandchildren and spending as much time as we can traveling to see them and visiting with them. So all of those certainly help me with my mental health.
Well, thanks for sharing your mental health and wellness tips and habits. Appreciate that viewpoint. The last question on our rapid fire question is, what advice would you give to a smart, driven college student who is about to enter the architecture engineering consulting industry?
Hey, come to work for RSNH. Well, I mean, that's true. It's a great place to work. Seriously, and talked about it a little earlier about this being a transformational time and, in the transportation industry. And, you know, I mean, with electronic vehicles, AI, innovative solutions that are out there, I mean, aging infrastructure that's just, you know, needing really smart and forward thinking innovators, you know, that it's just a great time. It's a great opportunity to be in transportation. And, you know, I would just say, you know, we need you. We need you in the industry. And, if you're coming, you know, if you're going into, let's say, college now, I think if you look at what's in front of us, it's you wouldn't make a mistake to think about, you know, doing this as a profession. That's for sure.
Well, you're absolutely right. And that kind of advice is something you can take to the bank. Come to work at RSNH, be an innovator, change the world, improve our communities. It's exactly what our mission is all about. This has been another episode of AEC Perspectives, and I've been thrilled to have Jim Hullett the Executive Vice President of RSNH's Business Growth Strategy Organization, with us today to talk about the state of transportation, what is in our future, what we're looking at, and how we can transform our industry and the communities that we work in. Thanks so much for being with me today, Jim. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it. And, certainly my pleasure to talk on this important subject today. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of AEC Perspectives. Follow or subscribe to AEC Perspectives wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And remember, at RSNH, we are driven to care.